Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Not too bad, well, you know.
Strange question. Are you familiar with the name Doan Robinson?
Nope.
Interesting. So he was commonly known as kind of Mr. South Dakota History and was the first state historian and was the primary cheerleader behind Mount Rushmore.
Oh, okay.
Before we go any further, let me introduce this man. This is my dad, Jimmy Weber.
And it's this weird thing. I'm working on an episode around the intersection of art and community. And he wrote this book in 1925 called Doan Robinson's Encyclopedia of South Dakota, which is this like several hundred page book. And you flip through this encyclopedia and you find entries on things like Sweet Betsy Gulch, which is southwest of Lead, this unincorporated town called Creighton in northwest Pennington County. He has an entry about Ben Blair, which was apparently a novel about the Dakota Cattle Company. But interestingly enough, and this is odd to me, he doesn't include Milbank. He includes Revillo. He includes a whole lot of other small towns, but he doesn't include Milbank. I don't know what to make of it.
No, I don't have a clue.
it's interesting. There's this entry on art that I'm working around. He writes, amateur art in the sense once known where every lady of culture was supposed to be able to do something in the use of oils and watercolor. And when the local teacher of art had her studio in every village has passed. And he says, it has generally been abandoned. I thought that was interesting. This is 1925, but I don't know.
Trying to bring art into the country.
Yeah, that's right. What do you think having been in the Milbank area and also having spent time in Watertown and Fargo, what do you think the intersection of art and community is? What is the value that creativity or art brings to a community?
Well, for me, for both Sioux Falls and Fargo, it was the draw that brought us to each of the places. I mean, if it wouldn't have been for the pavilion in Sioux Falls, you know, we wouldn't have went to Sioux Falls a lot of times. Fargo was a completely different art setup where the people were even part of the art. where I mean, it's what made Fargo was the diversity, and it's completely different from Sioux Falls. Town was really driven by the people. I mean, you knew that each one of the places had their own characteristics. The Rando, the artist that we went to quite often in Fargo, and it was more that, I mean, he was educating while he was showing off his artwork and hoping to sell something.
It makes me wonder, especially in the case of this guy, he saw the value in carving Mount Rushmore as a way of attracting people to the region for tourist dollars and for noteworthy regions. I wonder if he saw it as art. I wonder if he saw it as an expression of creativity as well.
That I don't know, but it definitely was, to me, he's what brought all the other people to Rapid City and through that area, that it was, you know, given it the characteristics of the bear country and all that kind of stuff. It's why everything is congregated there. If it wouldn't have been for Rushmore, it would have just been another spot out in the prairie. What Deadwood would have survived, whether it was there or not. Yep.
Wow. Well, good. Well, I just wanted to check in. I thought you might have a perspective. So I'll talk to you soon, Dad. I love you.
I love you too.
Hi, I'm Hugh Weber. Welcome to the Potluck Society.
We join a Potluck Society meeting already in progress.
An episode that we've been working on is focused on the intersection between art and community development. I've had the good fortune of sitting down with Zach DeBoer to talk about what that looks like in the context of his work. And I've had the humbling privilege to sit down and talk about Zach with Jason Roberts, who, as the head of the Better Block Project, kind of is the kind of world known person in this space. And to talk about Zach's work and to talk about the work here in the region in the context of Jason's work, which was super exciting.
Let me set the scene for you. I'm sitting at my dining room table, surrounded by close friends and colleagues. On the table, Sloppy Joe's, potato salad, and my favorite, Scotcheroo bars.
I'd love to talk about that aspect. And Altman, you and I, we were having a pleasant stroll down the streets of Plankinton. Talked a little bit. We, this past week, traveled all over the region working on this documentary for ODA.
We'll talk about the documentary in future weeks. Let's just put a pin in that for now.
And stopped at the Jamestown Buffalo and drove down the Enchanted Highway with its 80-foot sculptures across 20-plus miles of road. Of course, we were near Mount Rushmore and saw all of these great things. Dignity, the newest addition to the Prairie gigantic art collection.
You can tell I'm obsessed with these large artworks, and we're going to talk about that at some point in the future. Just stick with me.
And I suggested that it was something about the ability to rationalize it through economic development, but you maybe indicated that that might just be a foil to let people do what they do, which is create. Like, it becomes an excuse to create. I'd love to hear about that a little bit.
Right. I mean, I think that's what, I mean, I think you just said.
I just right? summed yeah. it up. Right. This is terrible radio.
Just that.
Who has driven the Enchanted Highway? Has anyone been up by a region?
Tell these guys a bit about it.
Enchanted Highway is a selection of like really massive monolithic sculptures that were all made by one man, I think, or a team led by one man, out on the stretch of road that starts in the region of North Dakota and then meets up with the interstate. Mm-hmm. And so as part of like the ODA, like I did a project with ODA for the event in Sioux Falls, and as part of that kind of drove throughout a lot of the states, a lot of South Dakota, North Dakota, and Minnesota, and drove on the Enchanted Highway, and like the way that's framed is that the guy did it because he wanted people to come to Regent, and if you had something there, people would come and like see your town.
But yeah, and Regent is like 600 people. I mean, maybe, maybe that. It's a small town.
It's not even close to 600 people. It's 160 people according to the 2010 census.
And really isolated. Like there's not. I mean, it's a thing that you have to get to. And you don't just kind of like chance upon. So, like driving on the road and kind of thinking, like you start coming out of Regent, you start with like the set of like a farm family made from old like tanks, right? Like old like grain or water tanks. And then you get like to like a rebar Theodore Roosevelt as a Rough Rider. That's right. And then you just kind of get progressively bigger and weirder and like harder to put into context, so like harder to rationalize. And then one is like this called Fisherman's Dream, and it's like just this field that's filled with massive trippy fish and like a tiny little boat. The man, like you can see a little like line going to the mouth of the biggest one, which is like this kind of eel like trout. And that, though it might have started with this lens of economic development, like people will come here to see this. I mean, I think that is just an excuse to create that thing. He wanted those things to be made real, and under the guise of economic development, had an excuse to do this incredibly like absurd activity. And the one of the interstate is this. It's like called Geese in Flight. And it's like, I think, the largest freestanding steel sculpture in the U.S. I mean, it's massive.
Altman's close here. Geese in Flight stands 110 feet tall, is 154 feet wide, and is the world's largest scrap metal sculpture.
And it's almost Egyptian. Like, pulling up to it, you drive up this little, like, gravelly road, and there's iron, like, steel geese, like, in flight along the way, just hundreds and hundreds of these little tiny geese. And then you get up to this, like, sunburst thing with the silhouettes of geese on it, and like from the interstate it's significant, and then like in front of it it's like kind of like moving. I mean, it's to think that somebody had the impulse to do that and then followed through on it. is really hard to understand. And for that reason, also really inspiring. Like, it kind of makes you think, like, what other hard to understand things are worth seeing through to the end.
It's amazing that you make the Egyptian connection, because I literally, as we were visiting it, said it's like the plain Sphinx.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. Like it's like this thing where you drive up and it feels spiritual, like you hope there's, you know, some sort of ancient burial site nearby. Yeah. Because
I totally had that same feeling. And something like that can trigger those feelings in people. I mean, like whether they say it in those terms or not, I think that anyone would have that feeling kind of in front of that object. And I don't know. It's like operating in a really interesting space that's hard to just explain away as a cool tourist attraction.
That reminds me of, you know, Dinosaur Park.
This is Zach DeBoer, a member of the Potluck Society, and our feature for today.
Being a WPA project, but at the end of the day, somebody wanted to make these giant cement dinosaurs and put them on top of a hill.
Right.
Yeah.
And within the context of the WPA that's making bridges and courthouses and, mm-hmm. you know,
this
dams.
This is the only exciting WPA project for the most part in the state.
Yeah.
Everything else as you go down that list is just road, mm-hmm. courthouse, post office, just that. But then there's Dinosaur Park, which is, you know,
yeah.
dinosaurs on a hill.
Just as essential.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, you're a big fan of Dinosaur Park, Molly.
I am a big fan.
Molly is a local graphic designer.
Those roads have had to be repaved, and those buildings have either been knocked down or whatever, and Dinosaur Park is still there. That served its purpose a lot longer than all these other projects.
Those dinosaurs are a little rough.
They do look just there. Those dinosaurs have been loved.
Before there's any more Dinosaur Park blasphemy, I'll take it from here. This week, I get to introduce you to Zach DeBoer. The work of running a city is often limited to elected officials and city administrators. Arts and culture are often pushed to the periphery of planning, development, and city design. But sometimes an artist sees the city and its people can be a canvas all its own. Zach is a native of Brandon, South Dakota, but if you spend any amount of time with him, you'll be excused for assuming that he's a transplant from Minneapolis or Chicago or even further away. I've come into creative collision with Zach many times over the past couple years, and each conversation is an adventure. The best practices of parking spaces, art mazes, building codes, and curating a city like an art gallery. We sat down a couple weeks back, and I talked with him for nearly 2 hours. Today, I want to share some of that conversation with you. Let's jump right in.
My name is Zach DeBoer. I am the owner of Exposure Gallery and Studios, located in downtown Sioux Falls.
Just for the sake of disclosure, the Potluck Society actually has a studio in Exposure Gallery. That's where we're recording this interview.
We are a contemporary art gallery and studio space for artists, but we also do a lot of projects in the community with a focus on urban design and city involvement.
You live at this interesting intersection of community development and art, or mm-hmm. art engagement or creative engagement. And I'm curious to hear kind of how you describe your work. And do you find yourself on one side or the other? Are you an artist? Are you in community development? What does all that mean? And why are those things important to each other? How do they inform each other?
That's a good question. I'm kind of new to like this.
Zach's new, but he's not that new. He's being modest.
And I think, I guess, whatever this is somewhat new in general. I think versions of being an artist, or in terms of being an artist concerned with community or interested in how design or contemporary ideas can affect a community, isn't necessarily a new thing. But I think that there's more and more interest in that area, or there's a lot more interest in cities. I see myself as an artist primarily, or at least an artist first, because I think that is the unique way in which I approach a lot of the issues or projects that I tackle, is through the lens of an artist. But I guess I am fascinated with the way a city works, or how a city could work, and how things like design or things like art can affect and improve a city. A lot of times art is that kind of line item in a city budget that's first to be cut. You know, the same thing goes with schools. But unlike schools, it feels like art in the city, or art's involvement with the city, is starting to be noticed or starting to be accepted as a viable economic tool or development tool beyond just quality of life for the people you know, coming downtown or living downtown.
Okay, do you see these lines of art, economic development, and community intersecting? I don't think that's a coincidence.
And so I see my role or what my job is. I just kind of look at what the city's doing. I try to involve myself in any project they might be doing, whether that's, you know, a parking ramp or a park or, you know, design standards, anything that can be looked at further or that could involve art or, I'll say, more contemporary urban design. And the urban design facet of this is kind of what drew me in and started kind of make those parallels between urban design and art and city, and that all started to blend together. So
why does that stuff matter? Why does it matter to you specifically?
Design affects everybody. I mean, it sounds very foofy extra stuff to put money into beautifying or designing a place in a certain way, but these are the things that people care about, whether they can audibly say that or not. We know through studies, and you know, cities have been around for a little while, and we've seen that that's where people go. They're attracted to art. They're attracted to these beautiful things. They're attracted to how a road that is 12 feet wide scares them away, but a road that is 9 feet wide welcomes them in, and they feel safe, and they want to walk on those streets, and they want to shop at those stores.
Pay close attention here. You're going to hear this again in a couple minutes.
I just became fascinated with how what something simple or seemingly not important can completely change an area. I'm obsessed with using existing resources to the best of their ability. I've started to kind of see this kind of through line through some of the stuff that I do, or just, you know, my own behavior in life. I like taking what exists already and figuring out how I can combine them or put them together or tweak them just a little bit to make them work. And so I see good city design is that. It's this constant like tweaking and seeing how we can be clever and use our existing resources and just change them a little bit and reactivate a street, you know, utilize a park better, utilize a building better, use it in a different way. I think, you know, cities are always changing, are always evolving, are always refining, and usually good design is the tool in which we refine these places.
I love how Zach looks and points to existing resources. I think so often this region and the communities of this region are defined by scarcity and what they lack. I think Zach sees the world in an abundant way, which I think is beautiful beyond the art that he's creating. Last year, Zach was an ODA builder, which was a micro fellowship and grant program for creatives and community builders. He spoke at ODA Bismarck in early 2016 and shared this.
Instead of a canvas, I had a street. Instead of paint, I had people. It all kind of made sense. It was all art, it was all design. So imagine if you were to apply those same thoughts to what you were passionate about. If you weren't limited by what your job title was or what your degree was in, you know, what does a park designed by a dentist look like? What does a community garden that the high school band director is in charge of look like? You know, how does he arrange those vegetables the same way he arranges, you know, a concert? What does a hairstylist do to approach homelessness in their community? And so I would ask, you know, as you go forward, to think about that. You know, don't feel limited by what your degree is and what you do. Think about what you want to do and how you can use the skills and the knowledge that you already have and use that passion and apply it. So everyone here is an expert in something. How can you use your skills to make your city greater?
I wanted to push him a little bit on this idea of his art degree and its relevance to his work today. Was it practical enough for South Dakota? Is it useful in the work that he does? How do these two things connect?
I think when you're growing up and when you're in school, and a lot of people's interpretation of, you know, if you get an art degree, you have a certain path or there's only a certain thing you can do with it. And I think to some degree that is true, but I think people need to view it like someone views a business degree, where it's more of a generic kind of degree where you can now use those tools that you learned in school and apply them to whatever avenue you want. And I think a lot of people see when they get their art degree, they're like, well, I'm going to be an artist. Hopefully I can find some grants and some residencies and I can sell artwork or, you know, I could teach. And, you know, those were kind of mostly the paths, but I'm seeing more and more people and myself included – seeing how you can use your art degree and apply that to other areas. You know, I don't want to feel limited by the degree I picked, and I don't believe that I am. I believe that the degree and the background and the interest that I have in art is applicable to any avenue I want. It's just a matter of how do I use it? How do I use those creative problem-solving tools that I learned to other areas?
And do you feel like that comes in directly on things like the parking project? Or, I mean, it seems so linear when I think about the Art Maze and those type of efforts.
I want to explain what I'm talking about here. The Art Maze was a project where Zach and a whole series of artists from around the region overtook an entire building that was about to be renovated. It was one of the most extraordinary experiences I've had, art-related, in the Midwest.
How does that creative side come in when it's the Visual Arts Commission or it's the working with city government around parking spots? I mean,
you know, I think what I've slowly realized is what I'm good at is creative problem solving, is looking at an issue and looking at it both from like, if we're talking about like parking, I'm looking at it from a physical spatial relationship. You know, I'm a gallery curator. I like to move things around until they're aesthetically pleasing. I want to be able to move people through my gallery in a way that complements the art and also complements, you know, them moving around. And so when I look at city problems, I think I look at it in that same kind of critical eye or analytical eye where, you know, I look at, okay, if we scoot this up, if we move this back, if we push this forward, this area feels dead. We need something here to make this person walk from here to over here. We need something. And so I think I look at, you know, problems that same way, you know, breaking down those elements and really understanding what the solution could be, or how do we use what we have and twist things around and shift things to make them work. That's what I like to do. You know, anytime there's, you know, something like a bike lane or the city says they're going to redesign a street, I immediately am looking for problems and looking for issues and looking for ways that, you know, we could tweak that, we could change that, we could add art here, we could add color here, we could do these sorts of things.
Doesn't he sound kind of like an evil mastermind with an artistic intent?
When I'm doing these projects, I'm always looking at what the wider effect can be. And, you know, some of what I do is like tricking people into having fun. And so sometimes you have to disguise things as like, hey, here's the main event, but I'm really excited about them to do this. But if I tell them it's this, they'll go, that sounds boring, I'm not coming. And so I always want to see how entertainment or what art, what that sort of event can be on the outside, but what its effects can be, you know, we talk about the greater good or the bigger picture, how these things can start to form, either physically form a space or form a neighborhood, or just mentally reassign how people view where we're having that, or maybe what the event is. Maybe they rethink, you know, when we did Art Maze, I think a lot of people, my hope was that a lot of people change what their thought on what an art show is or what, you know, viewing art is. I think a lot of people in the state, you know, probably, you know, a lot of people haven't been to art galleries or don't frequent them regularly, or if they have, they've been to, you know, major museums and big cities, and they have a certain idea of what they're like. You know, these are quiet, reflective spaces, you know, history, art, old, you know, it has a certain kind of connotation, and by doing a different kind of art show and bringing them into a different kind of environment, I hope that they go, oh, well, now my definition of what an art show is now, you know, it went from very small to very large. There's a wide spectrum of what can be an art show or what an art show can be. And so I always want to do that. I always want to make sure that, you know, I'm not just doing an event to make money and to bleh. You know, I want to make sure that a different experience is had and you know, ideas are changed and physical spaces are changed, those sort of things. Always making sure there's a deeper level to what I'm doing. I think that's where I'm kind of coming from with a lot of these maybe not obvious art projects like drawing, painting parking lines.
I've got to say I was curious. And so I asked Zach where this all came from. What was the jumping off point?
I don't know that there's one single thing. You know, it was something that as I get further into these things, I start to really think about the origins of where my interest in these sort of things come from. And I think it was really in college that I really started to be interested in either urban design or planning or how art can be integrated or how a downtown could be activated. I was part of a short-lived committee with the college's dean that had kind of gathered people from the fine arts department. And we talked a little bit about our school's involvement with downtown and the city and how there wasn't really a connect. And I started to really become interested in can we fill this empty building with a gallery, or can we, you know, how do we get freshmen to go visit downtown instead of Burger King? And that started to become really fascinating to me. When I got done with college, the city started working on the Downtown 2025 plan, which is their kind of 10-year envisioning kind of action plans. And I was involved in that process. And I really, once I got involved with downtown, that's when things started to kind of connect and click. And I saw that art's role was there, but maybe being underserved, that there wasn't, art wasn't part of that conversation as much as it should have been. And so I just started showing up to more and more things and saw that, or I started to, I guess, understand the importance of it and how problems could be solved through this, but they weren't being solved through that. And so I that's where my interest was that it felt like there's this old dusty chair that was labeled art, and it was always there. You could pull that chair up to the table, up to the discussion on any topic with the city or the state or just, you know, a neighborhood, and all I had to do was just go sit in it, because it wasn't really part of that conversation as much. You know, that's not to say there weren't art leaders who were pushing some of those things, or there weren't, you know, members of the city who were interested in having art being involved, but I think that it was more of a passive involvement. Yeah. And now I'm trying to make sure that it's an active part, and it's always one of the first things considered.
The thing I keep coming back to about this conversation, especially while editing it to share with you, was this absolute sense of clarity he seems to have. There's plenty of artistic whimsy with Zach, but he seems to have this insane sense of purpose. And he's truly hopeful, not an ounce of cynicism. He has a sense of what impacts he and his work can have on cities, his city, your city, any city. Just listen to this next part.
I think that as far as the work that I do, I think that I would love for, you know, if anybody is inspired by it or sees the value in doing this or being engaged with your city, and being engaged in the discussion of how it's formed, how it's designed, how decisions are made, and how that can be exciting and how that's not boring and how that's, you know, I think everybody's duty as a citizen in their city is to make sure that their city is good. I like the idea of the city being, you know, this living thing that the city isn't responsible always for taking care of us. Sometimes we need to take care of the city. It's kind of a symbiotic relationship. You get a lot more value and you get a lot more fulfillment when you're engaged with that, when you're, you know, I recognize that the city is this living thing that it's my job as someone who lives in the city to take care of it and to evolve it and to make sure that it's, you know, making the right choices. And again, I'm not talking about city government. I'm not talking about council members or, you know, ordinances, or I'm talking about the city as this living, breathing thing that it is responsible for us, but we are also responsible for it. And I hope that people see that, you know, especially in this Midwest area, like I said, because of our size.
This note on community size is particularly interesting for later in the episode, so listen closely here.
Because of our population, we do have that ability to connect a lot more easily with our leadership or with the decision makers in our communities, and I hope they see that. I mean, I have a degree in art education, but I am involved in these kind of wider conversations because I chose to be, because I started showing up, because I started asking questions and having my opinion heard. So I hope that people can see that and realize that they can do that in their city no matter what the population size is.
Near the end of the conversation with Zach, I asked him a simple question about who influenced his work, and this is what he had to say.
When I was starting to formulate these ideas about wanting to make roads work better, when I wanted to make murals in the city, I wanted to see how art and the city kind of intersected, or I didn't have a word for it, and I didn't understand how it was a job. It just felt like kind of these collection of things I was interested in. I saw my wife went to an ODA conference and saw Jason Roberts speak, and came. I wasn't able to go, and she came home and she's like, "I think you got to look at this guy, because he was talking about a lot of the things that you talk about." And I was like, okay, I'll check him out, and you know, pulled up a TED talk that he had done and was absolutely just blown away, because these were exactly the things that I was talking about, and you know, I didn't know I didn't understand the term urban design, you know, urban. I didn't understand what urban design really meant. I didn't know what tactical urbanism was. And it always felt like those sort of decisions were only made by, you know, people with, you know, engineering degrees that work for the city, and that was it. But I saw that Jason's ability to make these exciting things happen, to make physical changes to a city, to make businesses appear in neighborhoods that were dying, and he had no background. That, you know, he worked in IT, I thought, and that fascinated me. This idea that this guy with no formal education in this, but only with the passion and the excitement and I guess the resources of friends and collaborators that he had, could transform, you know, entire neighborhoods and blocks, streets, and it was huge. And, you know, I very quickly kind of like absorbed everything I could find on him and on urban design and tactical urbanism. That led me to people like Jeff Speck, who wrote the Walkable City, and you know, an amazing urban design expert and very passionate about cities. And I started to kind of just immerse myself in that world and seeing how art and design do overlap with some of those things. And I think my focus is more art, or at least that avenue that I pursue these things with is always more art oriented, because that's my background. So I think mine is a little more art focused at this time than maybe what Jason does, but that was massive for me. It was huge. I mean, I didn't have a name for what I wanted to do and couldn't understand it. It was interesting. I've never had that sort of problem before, where I'm like, I have these thoughts and these what feel like random pieces of interest or hobby or whatever, and I don't really see how they connect, and maybe they don't, but suddenly I see one thing and all these lines get drawn to it, and I, oh, this makes sense. I can do this. Aha. So yeah, I mean, and I started to look at some of the things that Better Block does, and started to really look at them through a lens of how can I do this in my city, and what areas in my city need this.
I love that Zach found an outside influence in Jason Roberts, but he didn't stop there. He seemed to know immediately that the shared language meant that they were on the same path and platform. He doesn't make Jason seem distant or place him on a pedestal. He saw him as a fellow traveler. How can I do this in my city? What areas need this? I thought it might be helpful for us to visit with Jason Roberts and to get to know him a little better. So I gave him a call.